bipolar disease for several years, and finding God is what made everything so much easier. Because instead of asking yourself, what am I going to do, where am I going to go, you have somewhere to run to. You have someone to show you the way. And a lot of people have the misconception that once you become saved or once you become a Christian, that all your problems go away. And that's not always true. And in general, that's never true. If anything, your problems get worse, because that's the time when you're declared a soldier of God. And soldiers don't sit on the sideline. They're out there on the battlefields. You know? And it doesn't mean that you're going to have to fight all the time. But when you get out there, you're definitely going to have to show that strength and show that endurance. And that shield and that strength, that comes from God. And it also comes from the people around you who are also followers of God. Because you may feel alone, but you're not. And that was my struggle when I wrote this song, because I felt completely alone. I didn't have anyone to relate to at the moment. And music is kind of what catapulted me and set me free and set me closer to God, believe it or not. And this song I wrote is called Identity.
See in front of me, create a new reality.
inviting me, David, and thank you, everyone, for participating this morning, and I hope the rest of the day is just as incredible as it started for all of us. This is such a huge blessing. I needed this just as much as you guys needed this, so thank you.
Ghost on heads, which means the joy head. I want to introduce a few amazing people in my life. like that are the reason why I'm standing up here and not at home, you know, like rolling up in a little ball, you know, full of anxiety. First, mama goes to my mother. Mama, parece por favor, my mother. My lovely wife, Rochelle. Where is my wife? Back there, please give her a hand. The reason I'm standing up here, and I will thank so many of you at the end of this amazing day. Everybody got here okay, obviously, right? Everybody good? Got the restrooms going? The raffle, don't forget the raffle ticket. Don't forget to make sure you enter that. We got a $1,500 iTunes gift card to give you. And I also want to thank Hallie. Where's Hallie? Has she left? Okay, thank you, Hallie, once again. And guests also, and all of you guys. Thank you so much. Let me pray, and then we'll get into kind of what we're going to talk about today, how to find grace through anxiety. So let's pray together. Lord God, I am just so pumped. I'm full of joy, not because of my circumstances, not because of my paycheck, not even because of my emotional, because you are faithful, because you are here, and all the amazing things that have happened, the miracles. I want to just declare that miracles have taken place for this to even occur, and I thank you in advance for the miracles that are about to happen, because you are our God of what? Of miracle. You are our God of faith. You are our God of joy. And Lord, again, you meet us in the middle of our anxiety, and today we just want to be, I don't know if we want to call it honest, but we just want to embrace the fact that we have things in our lives that aren't as you want them to be. They're not as we want them to be. And that's why we're here. We're seeking help. We're seeking guidance. We're seeking tools. We want to know, how do you get to that joy that people are talking about? How do we get there? So Lord, help us to do that in these brief moments in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. So again, thank you so much for being here. After I speak, then we'll have some amazing counselors and people that know even more, way beyond what I know in terms of anxiety and fear and all these kind of symptoms and things. And then we'll have a panel, and we'll have a microphone here. We'll pass it out to whoever wants to ask a question. Then at the end, before I forget, we're going to have the digital wall of joy. Those balloons back there, we'll have the Bozo Heads join us. And if you want to take a digital picture as a memory, as a souvenir today, John, who's back there, and his wife, Elizabeth, thank you guys for pictures and video, will help us. And then we'll email you these pictures as just as a memory of today, as a digital memory. But, you know, I also want to say thank you to 7th Street Church and to all the leadership of this amazing place. There's an event next door called, I think it's Gems Uncovered, correct? That is happening right next door, that is about training people that want to be involved in how to stop human trafficking here in our city. So thank you, God, for what you're doing through amazing ministries like Gems Uncovered. I also want to know if Gloria's here today. Is Gloria here? Gloria, I just want to tell this story. She wrote me a couple days ago. So many of you have written me and texted me and Facebooked me. Thank you so much. She was telling me how she's dealing with cancer. And yesterday she had her last bout of chemotherapy. And she said, Trig, you know, I probably can't make it, but I want to make sure that somebody takes my spot. And I want to reserve that spot for somebody else. So you may be that person that Gloria and her sacrifice allowed for you to be here. So I just want to thank God for Gloria and her amazing sacrifice. That's the kind of stuff we're doing here, guys. It's so amazing. I guess last I just want to say I've been praying for you. You know, I really have been praying for you. All of us have been. Because this is not like a topic that is yet out there in the mainstream, right? It's still something that we wonder, how do we even talk about this? How do we relate to God, to our coworkers? How do we relate to that child that we have, or that young person who's dealing with anxiety and issues of fear? How do we do this? And so I'm really excited. I've been praying because this event is designed to help you. I've never felt more comfortable. I speak a lot. I preach. I sing. I've never felt more comfortable talking about a topic than about this one. You know, it's because, you know why? Because I am so aware of what God has done in my life and what has had to happen for us to even get here to this place. So again, congratulations on being here. So wonderful. You know, if you had told me, it's part of my opening, I guess, here. If you had told me 5 years ago that I would be here talking about anxiety, you would have, first I would have gotten anxious,
And second, I would have had a panic attack right after that. Just thinking about it makes me anxious right now. Breathe, everybody, breathe. We're going to breathe a lot today, okay? I really believe that we need to rebrand how we talk about anxiety. You know, we need to rethink this thing of mental health. You know, I hate the term mental health. You know, why don't we come up with a cooler name? You know, like hashtag like PAS specialist, like, you know, panic attack specialist, or hashtag FOO, which stands for family of origin, or hashtag RBE, rapid breathing engineer, you know? Why can't we be those people, you know, like hashtag this whole thing and like become like the cool people? Why is anxiety like such a like, you're anxious, oh, I'm sorry. You know, like, no, I'm really okay. I'm not a normal person, you know. But, I mean, so many times when people talk about anxiety or even how we relate to ourselves, we use words, or people use words such as unstable, right? Or as maybe as fearful or weak. My favorite one is afraid. Oh, you're afraid. I'm sorry. And I like how people talk to us. They lower their voice. Oh, I'm sorry. What? I can't hear you. I'm like, I'm okay, really, I'm fine, you know, I'm totally fine. And yet, you know, there is this reality, right, to what we deal with. And you know, I'll tell you a little bit of my story. I've been dealing with anxiety since I was 5 years old. I remember my mom, who was here, Mama Goso, she would tell me the stories of me going to the ocean, and I would start like having panic attacks. I'm like, what is up with that? I love the ocean. But I would go to the ocean, and she would tell me I start to sweat. You know, I'm still doing that. Like, I sweat, you know, just for no reason. Like, what's going on? Part of the anxiety, my body doing something strange. When I was about 18, 19, 20, I remember sitting in the couch of one of my church leaders, and I suddenly started to, like, not, like, have shortness of breath. Like, speaking of rapid breathing, you know, I was like, what's going on? I was like, ooh, it's happening. Like, my world got smaller. It's, for me, it starts with my shoulders. Where does it start for you guys? Like stomach, yeah. Where do you feel it, the anxiety? Where does it start for you? Chest, yeah. So like shortness of breath for me, it's the shoulders. I know when it's coming because my shoulders go like this, and I'm like, okay. And I remember doing that in the office of my leader, and thankfully look, he told me, he said, hey, this was happening to you. Here's what's going on. Probably the funniest thing that I've ever experienced, and I think it's on my slide back there, is when I went to Palm Springs. And I remember this day, I went for a run, it's like 110, so bad idea, so don't do that, okay? If you deal with anxiety, don't run in 110 degree weather. But I go for a run, feeling strong, singing the happy song of that day, whatever it was. I'm coming back, and suddenly, boom, my shoulders and my vision, my breathing. And so there's this palm tree, see, after all, I'm in Palm Springs, so I grab to this palm tree, and I'm like, I think I'm going to die, you know, having a heart attack, right? Because it feels like a heart attack, right? How many of you, does it feel like a heart attack? Like, I need to call the emergency room, you know, I need to, like, check me in. It's, I'm dying, right? It feels like you're dying, like you're having a heart attack. But I remember thinking, because, you know how if you're going through a panic attack, you're like half rational, then half irrational? So I'm having, like, a rational moment, and I'm thinking, okay, if I die, who's gonna save me? Who's going to save me? And then Paul's phrase, you know how, like, everybody's kind of, like, not exactly young, right? They're all, like, you know, a little older. So I'm seeing people drive by, and I'm thinking, no, that person's too old. They can't pick me up. I'm like, Lord, am I stressing out over who's going to save me? I'm like, oh, that person looks like they're under 40. Okay, maybe they'll save me. Okay, good. How's your car? Is it big enough? So I'm, like, having these rational moments of, like, who's going to save me, combined with irrational moments of, like, I'm dying. It's all irrational, really, but that's what panic does, right? It tells you all these crazy things. And people are like, oh, I'm sorry. They're like, you don't get me, do you? No, they don't get us. And that's the thing about anxiety. People don't understand us. But we do. So I want to tell you, good job that you're here. We get you. You are okay here. Yeah. We understand you. God understands you. The Gozo heads are here. They're bringing you joy. They're bringing you gozo. They're saying, go in Jesus' name. You can do this. But, you know, there are obstacles, right, to being a joy bringer. Because really that is the thing that I've learned is that God doesn't want me stuck here. You know, that the reason why we're doing this conference is to help you move through anxiety. Why do we call it grace through anxiety. Because you know what I wanted to do with my anxiety for like ever is kill it. Right? I just wanted to kill it. Like, can you just tell me like the secret formula so I can just get rid of this thing? Like, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to go to no couch and therapy and pay money and take pills. I just want this thing to go away, right? Like, just tell me how to take this away. And well, guess what? It does. It does change you when you have to go through it. But what's on the other side? Because we get stuck at times. So what's on the other side of that anxiety? It's grace. I guess I'm going to tell you today, there's something on the other side. You're not stuck in the anxiety. You're not stuck with just being this fearful person or unstable, as the world calls us or as people tell us that we're unstable. There's grace on the other side. And that's what these joy heads are about. They're reminding us, and these balloons and all this joy and this happiness. Why are we talking about happiness? Because that's what we find on the other side of anxiety as we go through it. And we're going to talk about how to go through it. So how do we find grace through anxiety? The first thing that I think we have to do is be vulnerable. We have to be honest. We have to talk about this. That's probably the hardest thing, isn't it? To be vulnerable. I had so many of you, so many people email me saying, you know what, Trigger, I don't want to go to that because I'm not ready to really be vulnerable with this. I mean, that's why I congratulate you, because just being here and saying, yeah, I'm one of those, is part of your healing. Just being aware, being vulnerable. We have to be vulnerable in three areas. First, with ourselves. And I want to just tell you today, give yourself time. Don't feel like you have to be somewhere else that you're not. Just give yourself time. If you're not at that place of understanding even how to talk about this, give yourself time. This is a process, right, guys? Jerry and Peggy, we're going to come up here shortly. This is a process. This is not like, boom, okay, I'm the happy man. I'm Pharrell. I'm there. This takes time. But the thing is, be vulnerable with yourself. There are different stages to this. You know, some of us are beginners. We're just beginning to get comfortable. Some of us are maybe in the intermediate stage, like, okay, I think I have some language for this. I know what SSRI and all these, you know, what's an amygdala and hippocampus and PTS. You know, you kind of have some language for it. You understand it. Other people are more advanced. They're able to, like, you know, share with other people and bring perspective and maybe even help other people that are in need. So that's part of the understanding and being vulnerable with yourself. Second, we have to be vulnerable with other people. And that's another step, is how do you talk about this with others? How do we, what are the things that people tell us? Just go ahead and shout it out. This is like interactive. What are some things that people tell you when they see you in that anxious moment? What are some words that people use when you try to either talk about this or when people try to describe you? What are some things? Like, what do they say? Take medicine. Just take medicine? Yeah. Guilt, right? Guilt. Oh, man. How many people deal with guilt and shame, right? Like, what's that, Veronica?
Get over it.
Get over it? Yeah, right. What was that again here?
You're going to be okay.
You're going to be okay, yeah. Like, you know.
You have too much on your shoulders.
On your plate, yeah. You know, people think that it's because there's so much on us, you know, that then once that's over, then you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yes?
You're overreacting.
Yeah, the front row here is like laughing hysterically. You know, all of our therapists are like, yeah, it doesn't work. You know? Yeah, overreacting. Yeah, right. Yes, please.
She calls me a weirdo.
A weirdo, yeah. Oh, so we have a wife and a husband. Yeah, that's part of the other, right? Being vulnerable with others. How do you talk about this with your husband or your wife, with your roommates? Yes.
It's all that internet.
Oh, internet, yeah. I have a slide about Facebook later up here. It's so true. Like, you know, it's everyone wants to help us. Everyone wants to give us a reason so that we can, what, get over it, right? Like, just be done. Because who wants to see us anxious and having heart palpitations and not wanting to be in public? Nobody. People want to love us and help us. So that's the thing that I want to say. Be vulnerable with others so you can help them be compassionate. But you have to understand how to speak of this. So some things, I read this thing on Facebook. Umbrella. You guys see? There is this image of two people, and it's raining. Actually, it's three. And the two friends have umbrellas, and it's raining. You guys see this? So it's raining really hard. And this third person has no umbrella. They're just getting, like, you know, poured out. So the two friends are like, why don't you have an umbrella? Like, just go find an umbrella. And they're like, and the person, you know, the third person is like, but I can't find one. I don't know where he is. And he's getting like just dumped up, you know, it's just pouring and his clothes, it's just like all soaked, and he's not looking really happy. The other two guys are like, come on, man, just get an umbrella. Like, this is all you gotta do is just find an umbrella. And then it goes on to these other things, but the point is that's how it feels, right? Like, right? Like you're the one with an umbrella, and everybody wants to help you. Everybody wishes they could just, here you go, take the umbrella and be done, and be good. But we have to be vulnerable. I think we have to learn how to talk to people about what we're doing. The language. Talking to my wife, and that's been an amazing thing, speaking of mates. My wife has understood how to talk to me and how not to talk to me. Right? What to say, what not to say. Like, don't worry, never works. Right? It just doesn't work. But what about Matthew 6? Do not worry. Yeah, I know Jesus said it. But it's a process to seek the kingdom first. First we have to seek God, it says. Do not worry. Yes, I understand that. But he says, look at the trees. Look at the birds. Look at the leaves. So there's a process where we have to look somewhere else. Look at things. Understand the tools. Be vulnerable. Understand what's happening to us. And then the last thing is be vulnerable with God. Wow, is that hard for anybody to talk about this with God? To tell God, I'm anxious, God? And yet, what does he say in Psalm 139? I want to read that. If you have a Bible, or if you just want to read this is what God thinks of your anxiety. Because I think this is like the hardest one. For me, it is. I think more than people, more than self, it's how do I talk to God about this? Here's what God says about your anxiety. He says, O Lord, David, you have searched me, and you know me. You know when I sit on the couch. No, I just said when I sit. I'm thinking therapy. And when I rise, you perceive my thoughts from afar. Wow, you perceive my thoughts from afar. Oh, here comes Mary. I perceive her thoughts from afar. I know that she's dealing with anxiety. God perceives you. God gets you. Jesus understands. You know what? There's nothing we can tell you to fix you today, right? The biggest thing that we can give you is that God gets you. And I would say the second thing is that we get you too. You know, I think that we have to be able to be vulnerable with other people, with God, with ourselves. And to understand, and let me just hear the last verse, the end of Psalm 39. It says, search me and know my heart. Test me and know what? My anxious thoughts. Not just thoughts. I love every verse that says anxious. I have them all, like, you know, underlined in my Bible. I'm like, yes, that's me. You know, like, do a word search on the word anxiety in the Bible and just, like, write all those verses down. It says that God first perceives you and he perceives your thoughts. And then it says when he searches and he tests us, he knows my anxious thoughts. And then it says, see, David says, if there's anything offensive, and lead me in the way everlasting. Lead me. That's the through anxiety. That's finding grace through. God is leading us somewhere. That's what we want to tell you today. God is leading you. Be vulnerable with God. Be vulnerable with yourself. Be vulnerable with others. You ever have triggers? You know, what are your triggers? Like, what gets you in that place? Like, for me, it's anytime my kids get sick or my wife has a cold. I'm like, she's dying, okay? Like, she is going to die right now, right? What are some of your triggers that kind of get you to that place? Like, just shut them out. What are some of the triggers? Meaning, what gets you in that place of anxiety, of fear, of depression? Like, what? Because usually there's a trigger, right?
Being rushed.
Shouting. Like, when somebody shouts at you. Yeah. Noise, right? How many of you noise? Like, ooh, right? Noise, right? Grief. Yeah. What other triggers are there?
Non-stop.
What's that?
Non-stop texting. If you're not from the generation.
Yeah, right. Anybody get like paranoid about people texting you? Like, what does this mean? Like, what does this really mean? You hate me. I know, you're gonna leave me. I'm terrible, aren't I? They're like, I just said let's have lunch. That's all I said. It's so crazy though, right? Yes.
What triggers me is when I'm on the
site
and somebody's constantly trying to tell me how to fix me.
Yeah, exactly. Fix me, yeah, that yes, back there.
Expectation.
Yeah, people expect you to be more or less, yeah. You know what? Yes.
Feeling what?
Trapped, yes. Yeah. Like, Palm Springs for me, like, who's going to save me? Literally, I was like, who's going to save me? I mean, you really get into that trap zone. and your world gets so small. And that's what triggers. We have to understand that there is a triggering. The second thing is that I want to talk about in terms of triggering, in terms of how to find grace, is you have to integrate the mind, the body, and the soul. It's not just prayer. It's not just not prayer. It's not just antidepressants. It's not just not antidepressants. There's a combination of mind, body, and soul. The mind, the triggers, we have to learn how to control. Maybe I don't like that word control, but we have to learn how to speak to our mind. We have to learn how to talk to ourselves. Philippians 4 says, whatever is true, whatever is lovely, think on these things. And you know what? I'm a big believer in talking about things, meaning like actually speaking the truth. In other words, if I'm like driving and I'm like, my kids are going to die right now. Like, I know they're dying right now. Like, I have to speak and say, they're not dying. Or when I'm like having a panic attack, I have to literally with my mouth say, I'm not having a heart attack. Let's practice right now. So I don't know what it is for you. Think about it for a second. What's your trigger? What's your worst fear, right? And then I want you to literally say, if you're at that place, if not, don't worry, okay? So we're not going to force all of us to be at this place. But if you're at that place where you want to practice speaking the truth, I want you to say something like, I'm not dying. So on the count of three, think about what it is that you need to tell yourself that's a truth that you need to speak. And then I want us all to say it on the count of three. Okay, ready? Okay, one, two, three. I'm not dying. Yeah. So that thing, you know, you said it at the beginning, it's like, I'm not dying. You know, it's kind of hard, right? But you have to be able to talk to yourself and be able to remind yourself, the mind, the body, diet, exercise, food, understanding your brain, breathing. For me, chocolate pancakes, I can't have them. Man, I love chocolate pancakes, but I can't have them. My wife loves to make them, but now she understands to make me my little stack of what? Not chocolate, because the chocolate makes my heart just go nuts. And then it just, now I see them and I'm like, uh-oh, panic attack. So I have to know, say no to chocolate pancakes. Part of learning your body, what your body needs. You know, there's some foods, right, that attack us, that really bother us. Some people, it's coffee. To me, coffee's fine. I'm fine with coffee. It doesn't really bother me. For some people, there's some things that are those triggers of our body. We have to understand our bodies, our soul, what God thinks of us, our body, our mind. And then the last thing is we have to just simply rename our anxiety. You know, it says in John 15 that God rejoices, that he rejoices over us. He says, make my joy complete. He says, and rejoice. And then Philippians 4, 16 times Paul says, rejoice, rejoice. Imagine if we were to rename our anxiety and put it, and call it something else. I remember when I lived in Colorado 3-4 years ago, I went to see a friend, Debbie, who was my counselor, my therapist. She was really my spiritual guide. And I was coming to her always fearful. I called myself Fearful Trey. It was my little thing for myself. I had a little name for myself. And I remember one day I went to this coffee shop and she said, Trey, today I'm calling you Fearless Trey. Your name is in Fearless. And that so changed me. Just to rename who I am. So I want you to think about what would be your new name? You know, what is your current name that you've given yourself? Fearful, anxious, broken, screwed up, unstable, whatever your name is for yourself. We all have a name or two, right? That we give ourselves, that people give us and we adopt. But what would be that name if you were to speak the truth, if you were to be vulnerable with yourself and with God, if you were to integrate your mind, your body, and your soul, what would be that name? I want to just think about that. Just to think about that. And I want to pray, and then I'm going to invite my friend Peggy to come up. But I want to just think about that name. Maybe that name is, I am now Joyous Joyce. Maybe my name is now Radical Rochelle. Maybe now my name is Creative Godless. You know, what would be that new name? And now you may think, well, I'm not that. I'm not there. But you're doing this in faith. Not because you're there, but because you're saying, that's where I want to be. For me, I want to be fearless true. Even though I deal with fear. Fearless true. So I want to pray and think about that name right now. Then I'm going to invite my friend Peggy to come up. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this name that you've given us. This new name that you want to remind us of. You are here. You are good. We're going to learn so much today. I pray, Lord, that my words would be just an encouragement to people. And that you, Lord, would rename us. I pray that in the power of Jesus' name, that you would rename who we are. that we would, even though we have our own names for me, it's fearful. I always call myself fearful, but I've been renamed by you as fearless. So I want to thank you for that, that I am fearless, and that in this room there are creators, and there are intuitives, and there are achievers, and there are healers, and there are joyous, grace givers, joy bringers. There are map makers. There are people that create and change things by your name, by your power, in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Thank you so much, guys. Please give a warm welcome to Dr. Peggy Lesnick as she comes up.
Good morning. Trigg, I think you should just sit for your psychology licensure and be a psychologist. He seems to know a lot through practical experience. My lovely sons are here today. They both attend USC and they were able to come and join us. And this is Edward and Amanda now. There are so many places I could take this conversation and so many different ways to go. I think the most important thing is for each of us to recognize that anxiety and moving through anxiety is a process. We want things to happen right now, and they just do not happen right now. It's a process, and it's important to know that. I think something else that's important for you to know is to be educated about how did I come to have anxiety? Because I think if you know how this happens, it arms you with more information. You know, it will help you to calm yourself and move through anxiety. So learning how, which is what I'm going to address, is not blaming anybody. It's just is what it is. You know, each of us has anxiety. How did we get this anxiety? And of course, there are many ways, but some things that come to mind that I utilize a lot with my clients, my practice, is I help them to understand the family that they come from. So anxiety is multi-generational. It came from your parents, it came from your grandparents, and the parents before them, and it's all within them. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you can understand
that.
Okay. If you... And I do. If you can understand multi-generational, that your anxiety has come from a multi-generational place, then you could basically say, okay, this is kind of an easy setup. There's a rigid family system and a chaotic family system. A rigid family system is where there's lots of rules. There's a rule for this, 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 and then another rule for that too. That's rigid. Then on the other side is chaos, where there are no rules. You know, no rules at all, no role modeling, nobody to say these are some rules. And so many, well, all of us have... I can't tell if this is working. Okay, all of us can perceive and understand that we came from either a rigid system or a chaotic system, and some of us that got more attention were kind of more in the middle, which is cool too. All right. So when you come from a more of a lots of rules, no rules, the end result is you develop a false self, which is a person that's not who God made you to be. It's a false self that allows you to become that person, that false person that has to live in that rule set. You understand that? Cool. Because that's important for you to know. That the false self then is the anxiety piece that we're talking about. That's the anxiety piece. All right? So do you need me to repeat that, or do you have it? Do you understand that? You want to repeat it? Okay. So, in a nutshell, we all grew up in a family. It could, traditional family, non-traditional, whatever. We grew up, period, because you're sitting here, so I knew you grew up. Okay. All right. You grew up in a family with lots of rules, which should be rigid, or a family where no one was really there to help you create rules and role model for you. And then there's some of us in the middle that have a mixture of both of those, which is balanced. But no, nothing's perfect. But I'm just inviting you to figure out where you were on that spectrum. And in order to live in that system, you created a piece of a false self in order to live in that system. Okay? Do you need an example? Okay. So, if my dad told me, you do not, and he did tell me, do not have sex with boys at a young age, that's not the right thing to do. And I would say, okay. See, that's right. That's not the right thing to do. And then I went to a party, and I saw all this going on, and I then would have to go back and report to my dad and say, no, none of that was really going on there, but there was a lot of that. And even though I didn't do it, I had to be able to create an image for my father so he would know that I was okay and I was his good girl, you know, and that he would still love me, and that most of all, that I followed his rules, because we don't want to please our parents. We really do. So that's what I'm trying to say, a false self. Can anybody resonate with false self?
Yeah.
You can? Does anybody want to give an example? Go ahead.
My temper was one of the things that was really, we're not allowed to give out negative emotions at all. My mother, I believe, she did a lot of positive attitude because I was sitting down in about 7th grade. And I being such a compulsive and bipolar, I focused on that 100%. I hadn't developed it. I didn't feel like, or nor did I feel like acting like everybody in my family. But with that anxiety, I had to adopt a good boy thing, which never feels bad emotion.
There you go. That's an example of where your anxiety is. That's a key. I mean, that's important component of where your anxiety and our anxiety comes from, that false self that has to be adaptable to live in the system that we live in our family system. And as you can see, we all have families, that generation, another generation. Okay, so that's something interesting just to keep on your shoulder. Just something to think about is the false self. Thanks for sharing that. Okay. So, beyond the false self that has to develop, there is another interesting area that I think that you could be educated about that would help you with anxiety, and that's how people attach or how they don't attach to others. And we also learn how to attach or not to attach when we're very young people, very young, you know, 0 to 6, all of the eye attaching to a baby or a young toddler that walks away but looks at his parents and knows I get to come back to my mom and dad or my caregiver, my grandma, whatever, I get to come back. So there's all this attachment and safety that happens and confidence that builds as a young toddler growing up that allows us to be our true self, our God-given self. And sometimes, even in the most perfect cases, you know, you're not going to get what you need to fulfill the attachment that's needed. Now, you can imagine, like, let's say some circumstance where a baby is abandoned, or even if just someone is so busy and they just don't give the toddler this attachment thing. It's really important. It doesn't sound like it is, but it really is important to have attachment and closeness and hugging and eye contact and so forth. But people learn how to get safety at a very, very young age, and if they don't get the safety that they need, it's very difficult for them to attach. So you grow up and you get involved in adolescence and you grow into adulthood and you're carrying along these attachment, ability to attach or not to attach. And you kind of really don't even really know what that really means until you get in a relationship and get married, for example, one of those kind of relationships where you have the marriage thing going on. And you get these hassles going on and anxiety that comes with, I don't even know who this person is or even who I am in this relation, this love relationship that I am, that I'm in, which creates a lot of anxiety. So I wanted to educate you a little bit about, you know, about the rigid versus the chaotic family system. Also, how people learn to attach or not to attach, and what does that mean when we come into our adulthood? And that's kind of defined with the false self with what anxiety is. So that's some education about anxiety. All right? So now, I wanted to teach you a tool, a practical tool. Well, let me back up a second. I do have a therapy practice, and I believe that the Lord is the salvation, and the Lord is the way, and that's my belief, and I love the Lord, and I ask Him to guide me all the time, and I think that for me that's the most important tool that each of us can always carry in our heart, to have an open conversation and talk openly, like I'm talking right now, with the Lord and develop the relationship with the Lord. And I can tell you, you know, many examples, personal stories of my own, but, you know, I just want you to know that that's the truth. You know, the open relationship with God is the number one thing. And I also say that in my practice, I'm not a big pill pushing for anxiety or depression. You know, I really truly believe in the process of talking, you know, coming in and doing the work and talking about family of origin, talking about your rigid or your chaotic family system, talking about how you don't know how to attach and how you want to learn to attach and how you want to be healthy in your relationships. And that all comes a lot through engaging in talking conversation, not pills that floats you in another direction. Pills, I guess, are required in some cases, but it's really doing the work of what of those things I just told you about. And FYI, if you find a therapist that you really like and you get to the point where you're beginning to get through this anxiety, remember, because we're talking about moving through anxiety, okay? When you got to move through it, it's like moving through the storm. So what usually happens is you'll get to a point where you're getting really close to getting some resolution, and then people quit. And you don't see them anymore because they're getting close to moving through. And that just says a lot to me. It's not like they don't want to do the work, but a lot of times people ask, you know, what will I have if I don't have my anxiety? You know, who's going to be there for me? My anxiety is always there for me. What if I don't have it? And a lot of times people, you know, choose to stay stuck in that, okay? All right. So there's one tool that is a really practical tool that with the last few minutes that I have up here to talk to you that I would like to use to teach you. If you have any questions, you can, you know, obviously shout them out. I wanted to know if there was a couple in here where the wife called them a name or something. Who was that? You too? Yeah. Would you be willing to be my model for a drama triangle?
We're trying.
We're trying?
I'm having anxiety.
So, I'm a very practical person. I don't like to speak theoretically too much. I think I only can capture your mind for a few sentences, so if I lecture too much, it's not fun. So I like to work practical purposes. What you can use, come on up. Okay. Now, in the drama triangle, I don't have it written anywhere, and I wish I did, but if you have a piece of paper and a pencil, draw a triangle. Okay. And draw a triangle. On the top, you're going to write placator. Okay. A placator is a person who avoids confrontation by just giving in. Is anybody that? Okay, that's a placator. Okay. Now, the other point on the triangle is a victim. So you write victim on the other point on the triangle. It doesn't matter which side, just put the victim. Victim is because you didn't help me, I'm going to always be in the rut I'm in because of you. Okay, does anybody ever do that? Sometimes, okay, that's victim. And then the other point on the triangle is persecutor. It could be AKA bully. Persecutor. Yeah. You are a crybaby because you can't get over your anxiety fast enough. You know, get over it, jeez. Okay, does anybody relate to that? Persecutor. Okay, now this is actually called the Cartman Triangle. You can look it up on the Google, like you can look up everything else on Google. And this drama triangle, I assure you, if you stay in the drama triangle and you learn these roles in the drama triangle, you will never have a healthy conversation. It never ends well. And I don't really ever use the word never, but truthfully, this is the truth. If you are in this kind of this drama triangle, it's going nowhere. And what our goal is to step out of the drama triangle. Now, we're going to do that here with these folks. Step out of the triangle and use I statements. So make up an arrow pointing outside of the triangle and put I statements. I feel, I need, I want, I. Okay? So let's just look at a regular example of how these folks communicate. And, you know, we'll just see how it goes. And I'll try to point out to you the different parts in the triangle. And I would like to start with you. I had heard you say that there was, my wife calls me that. But let's just go into, you step here, you stay over there, okay, and there doesn't have to be a third person, and you'll figure out that in a few minutes, why there doesn't have to be the third person, because you actually move into different positions as you talk dysfunctionally to each other, okay? All right, so let's have a regular conversation, starting with the name-calling thing. When you call them that.
Oh my God, I told you we were leaving at 9 o'clock. Really? You're not ready yet? Weirdo, you tell me to hurry anyway.
Okay. So she's accusing him. She's saying, you're not ready. You're late. You're making us late. You know, loser, get going. Kind of thing. Okay? She didn't say loser, but I said that for her. Okay? All right. Your response?
She wanted me to get your coffee, she wanted me to help you iron your clothes, she wanted me to get this, get that, and I gotta get ready too. I let you into the shower first, I let you do what you gotta do. I try to
help. Stop.
Okay,
doing. Okay. He's over here, and he's the victim. Okay? Because he's saying, I let you go first. Right? I let you go first. You know, you want to be happy with the position that you're in, so forth and so on. You understand? Okay. So, if this continues to escalate, this happens in real life. This happens to each of you. This is not just their conversation, but it's applicable to your workplace. It's applicable to your husbands and wife. It's applicable to your children. It's a fascinating tool to learn, because if you use it enough and listen, you'll be able to catch yourself in these roles here. And when you catch yourself in one of these roles here, you will not ever have a good ending in the conversation until I'll teach you that tool, how to have a good ending. Okay? But we're still learning what a persecutor, a victim, and a placator is. Okay? Okay. So, now he's just accused you of needing to like your shower and all that. Now what?
A few words might be exchanged, but I just say,
okay, whatever, you know, just whatever. Okay, whatever, I'm not going, you know.
Okay, whatever, you're not going.
Yeah.
Okay, now what?
She said, whatever, I'm not going. Okay, so we're going to move over here to the victim. She's now become a victim. Oh, whatever, I'm not going. Then what do you say to that?
I want to argue.
Because he's recognizing, if he just says, I don't want to argue with you, honey, I don't want to have an argument with you, so it's okay, you don't have to go. In fact, let's not even go, let's just watch the football game. Forget it.
That didn't happen.
Well, you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so he came up, he decided to give up his position and say, it's, you know, I'm not going to argue any further. We're not, we just won't go or whatever. You know, to make you happy, we're not going to do what we were going to do today. All right? Okay, do we need to go any further with that argument? No? Okay, so you understand? Okay, now, how you get out of that drama triangle, it creates tremendous anxiety. Okay? It's tremendous anxiety. And how you can de-escalate the anxiety until you...
But I gotta be truthful. Before I say, like, I don't want to argue, what I don't want to do, I don't want to argue, it's because most of the time I catch myself sleeping. I catch myself raising my voice at her. I catch myself being angry towards her and you know, maybe even disrespectful. But then, like, something comes at me, like, you know what? Just shut your mouth. Quit arguing. So I'll say, baby, I don't want to argue. I don't want to fight with you. Or, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, I got to keep it real, too. I got to pay you off.
Well, see, that, then that's a good setup for the resolution. Okay? Because let me just reiterate or recap, is that he has feelings, but he's not going to say them because he doesn't want to have to get... Well, I know, but you do feel guilty because you don't want to hurt your wife's feelings, because you can raise your voice and hurt her feelings, and you don't want to. And you just told me that, okay? You said, I'm going to back off how I really feel because I can be a bully sometimes, and I don't want to be that way to my wife because I love her, okay? We all love each other. It's just, you know, like how we talk to each other that creates huge anxiety, okay? All right, so the resolution to this, and we have to practice it, is a good segue to what you said, is that he has to, okay, you're in the triangle, right here, you step out of the triangle, take a step out, so he's no longer in the triangle, until he learns it, he's got to physically just take a step out, because now he knows, okay, I'm out of the triangle, and what he really wants to say is, I really want to go to the game, and we need to schedule a shower time so that we're not late. I need you to listen to me to tell you how much I want to be able to work this out with you. You over here would say, I can't remember what was your thing. You were demanding and accusatory. So what would be an I statement that you would use? An I. And the reason why you use the I is because you own the I. Okay, you own that statement. If you own it and make it your own, he really can't argue that with you. If you say, you are slow and you are holding me up, then he can go, well, you're slower than me. Okay? So whatever. But if you say, I am not moving fast today, I am not going to be able to make it on time, he can't go, how can he argue with that?
Like, I'll shut down and just whatever and be quiet until we...
Yeah.
And I stay in the victim role. So I see that today when we were speaking.
Oh, give him a round of applause.
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of our arguing is because I'm searching for that connection that I didn't get with my parents, of that security. And I was a cheater and a runner for so many years, but now I'm trying to be still.
Yes.
And I'm trying to find that common ground of connection with him. So.
And you know what I heard him say? I heard him say three I's. I. Okay, so you're owning it, and that is a step. To reduce anxiety, and each of us has our own individual ways that we express anxiety, and it's okay to have anxiety, and it can be talked about and moved through. You don't have to sit with the anxiety. Reach out for help, and I did pass out some information. You're always welcome to contact me if you have any questions about today or have any personal concerns about talking about your anxiety, treating your anxiety. Okay? Thank you so much.
Give her a hand once again. Thank you, Peggy. Yeah. I saw Peggy for a couple of months there at USC as a friend, and we were trying to figure out how to do a ministry there on campus, and so she's a good friend. Highly recommend her. She will see you, talk to you, just model things. I was in tears. Like, oh, my God. You know, that was so amazing. So thank you also to our friends for coming up. So give them a hand. Do some dust. Yeah. Okay, everybody, three. All right, okay. Let's continue. Another friend that has helped me so much. I saw Jerry for almost 2 years. He's part of a CIFT, Center for Individual and Family Therapy, just down the street here. And what can I say? Just everything about Jerry was so helpful to me. I came at a time into his office where I was at that beginning place of really just lost and in exile. And he came and gently loved me, and together with my wife in this amazing church, and a lot of great things. Brought me out of that place, and he's going to talk about storytelling. One of the things I love most about Jerry, he always told me a story, and I love stories. So please welcome Jerry Double Up. I saw Peggy for a couple of months there at USC as a friend, and we were trying to figure out how to do a ministry there on campus, and so she's a good friend. Highly recommend her. He's going to talk about stories of our body. You know this. You just heard some of the, you know, even David talking about how panic, what does it do to his body? His muscles get tight, and his heart starts to beat, and you can feel it in your body. Well, the other thing that's really important to know about anxiety when it affects you in your body is what happens in your brain. Okay, when you start getting anxious, the more anxious you get, the more blood in your brain goes to the lower part of your brain. And that's because that's where the seat of your emotions are, and that's where the part of your brain that tells you to run, flight, fight, or freeze, right? That part's down here. All right? So when the emotion gets strong, your blood is going to naturally go down to the bottom part of your brain, and guess what? There's not a whole lot of blood left for your frontal cortex.
and you can't think anymore. You are so caught up with, oh, I'm in danger, there's an impending doom, and I'm scared, and all the blood's down here, and you can't think. You don't have the capacity to think. That's what you know, people that say I'm a poor test taker. You know why? Because they're so anxious, all the blood's in the bottom of their brain, they don't have any life in their frontal cortex. If they would just calm down the blood and go back to the front, they would remember all the stuff they studied. Right? So we got to remember how it works. Now, most people that come in as my patients, they say, we just got to get rid of this anxiety. It's really killing me. We just got to get rid of it. And you know what I found? Is yes, God can do miracles. And he can take stuff away, just boom. But most of the time he doesn't. Because he wants us to come to trust in him. He is our ever-present help in trouble. What happens when we're in trouble? We get anxious. Right? And he wants us to find contentment and peace in him because he's the God of peace. So, here's a God who says to us, and he can say this, right? Because he's our ever-present help in trouble. He can say, like in Psalm 37, don't fret. He says it repeatedly in Psalm 37. Then Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, what does he say? Don't worry. But what if? Don't worry. And then the best chapter in the whole Bible on anxiety, Philippians 4. What does Paul say? Don't be anxious about anything. Right? Now, God can say that because God knows how to help us. Now, the question is, do you know how to help you? Right? Now, I'm going to tell you a story. And I find that most people can understand what needs to happen, how to help somebody, what they need, if it's more related to a kid. So, this is a story about a mom and Jimmy. So, Jimmy and a pop. I could have been dad too, but I chose mom. About Jimmy. And I want you to pretend you're the mom. You're going to be the mom. Think like the mom, right? So, Jimmy is 10. Comes home from school. And his mom looks. Jimmy's really distraught. She says, Jimmy, what's the matter? Jimmy says, I'm never going back to school, ever. Now, when I ask my patients, what does Jimmy need right now? You know what the most of my patients say? They say what that person over there said. Jimmy, it's going to be okay. And Jimmy's going, no, it's not going to be okay. It's never going to be okay. You don't know what it is like at school. And so, mom has to realize Jimmy needs first, most, is for mom to help him with his emotion. Because all his blood's in the bottom part of his brain. Right? So mom says, oh son, you're scared. You must have had a horrible day at school. And she comes and sits by him on the couch. And he starts to cry. Let's him cry. And when he starts finishing crying, she says to him, what happened at school today? And then Jimmy can talk. And he says, well, you know, Tommy, he's mean. And he told me my cap was stupid. And then his friends all started laughing. And then one of his friends took my cap, and they started throwing it around. And I tried to get it back, and I couldn't. And they all laughed and laughed. And then the girls saw it too, and they came over and they laughed too. Everybody was laughing at me. He starts crying. His mom steps after he starts crying. No wonder you don't want to go back to school. Anybody that went through that would not want to go back to school. Anymore. That's anointing. That's grace. That's what Jimmy needs first. And God understands this. Here's another story. It's from the Bible. John 7. Woman's caught in adultery. And she's being drug up to Jesus by the religious leaders. And she knows what's going to happen. This law has been going on for centuries. Centuries. Everybody knows what's going to happen. She's going to get stoned. It's not a matter of if she's going to get stoned. She's going to. It's just a matter of how quick it's going to happen. Now, Jesus doesn't have to say, "Woman, what's the matter?" And she doesn't have to say, "They're going to kill me." It's all obvious. But Jesus looks at her and sees her trembling, petrified. And he bends down, not to pick up stones. He bends down beside her. And he starts writing in the sand. And I believe he wrote something that communicated that, "I'm here with you. I know you're scared. And I believe you." He knew she needed to have help with her emotion first before he could start talking about truth. That's grace. But we need more than just empathy, don't we? We do. And God's full of grace, and he's full of truth, right? So after we empathize, we need more. And I'm going to tell you a little quick story here. It's kind of funny. George and Guard, our boys, and they're fighting like crazy at the table. And their mom's making pancakes for them. Not chocolate ones, by the way. Just pancakes. Pancakes, right? And they're fighting because they want the first pancake. And they're hitting, and mom sees us. She walks over to the boys. She looks them in the eye. She says, boys, look, look, look. I know that you're both very hungry, and you want the first pancake. But if Jesus was here, he would say, "Let my brother have the first pancake." Now, Jesus goes, He's thinking, right? Blood's going back to his frontal cortex. He's thinking, "Garth, you need Jesus." See, when we calm the emotion down, we can actually use our frontal cortex, and it works. It works. We can start to figure out our situation and come up with the right things that could be helpful. And I work with a lot of couples, and what I find is when they're in the office and when they tell me what it's like at home, it is pretty emotional, right? And so I'm constantly working with them on how to calm the emotion, be able to learn how to empathize with themselves so that they can think. And they can think, what do I need to say to my spouse? And like what Dr. Peggy was talking about, what I statement do I need to use? I think, but I can't think if all this emotion is going on inside me. I have to learn how to empathize with myself first. So I want to tell another story, because I find that most of my patients who come to see me, they don't struggle with acute anxiety like that's the only thing that, you know, they have in their life. It's more chronic. It's more complicated. It's more like, where is this coming from? I don't quite get this anxiety. It's kind of confusing to me. So this is a story about Jerry. He's married. He has two little girls. They're 2 and 4. Jerry's heading home. It's 10 o'clock at night. Two girls are in the back seat. His wife's sitting across passenger seat.
They just left a relative, and they had spent the night with this relative. And they were, Jerry turns on the highway, and all of a sudden, there's red flashing lights behind him, and he says, "There's a cop here." And his two girls in the back seat start crying. They're catching Jerry's fear. They're scared because Jerry's scared. Their dad's scared. They're scared. Now, an unempathizing person would probably say something like, "That's stupid. What are you afraid of that cop for? You haven't drank a drop tonight. You didn't go through any stop signs. You weren't speeding. Why are you scared of the cop?" Well, my wife maybe could have said that. This is Jerry, right? This is my story. Right? And Jerry could have said that about himself. He could come to therapy and say, "What an idiot I am. I'm scared of cops, but I don't need to be scared of cops. What a stupid person I am. What's wrong with me?" And Jerry's therapist knows that that's not going to work. So Jerry's therapist says, "Seems, Jerry, you have an anxiety in you about being afraid of authority figures." Jerry goes, "Yeah, I guess I do." Therapist says, "Have you noticed that before in your life?" Jerry says, "No. Yeah. Some of my teachers. And my parents a little bit, yeah, my dad, yeah. Therapist says, "Well, it makes sense why you were scared of that cop when the flashing lights came on. It's a holy figure." Therapist says, "Did you get punished a lot for doing bad behaviors as a kid?" Jerry says, "No, I was a good kid. I was afraid of doing bad stuff. I was worried about getting in trouble." Therapy says, "What are some of your earliest memories about being scared of other things?" And, "Well, oh, I remember when the elders came over. Every year in the church we attended, two elders would come over. They called it house visitation. They wore black suits. They had black ties. They looked really stern. And my parents, they were really nervous about them coming over. And they gave us kids a big speech about sitting really still and not saying a word and don't do anything. And we were all scared." Therapy says, "Your parents were scared that they wouldn't be acceptable to the elders. No wonder you were scared too." And Jerry thinks, "Oh, I remember one time. This was really scary. We were in church, and this one woman wanted to take communion. And we always had a communion table right up front of church. And you had to go up and sit around the table right in front of church. But hardly anybody took communion. Because you had to see a vision from God if you were going to take communion. And this woman said she saw a vision from God. And she could take communion. She comes up to the front of church. And those elders said to her, 'We decide who sees a vision and who doesn't. Go sit back down.' And everybody in the church got scared." Therapist says, "No wonder you have chronic anxiety about authority figures. Anybody who went through what you went through would experience anxiety when they feel the presence of an authority figure." Empathy. Jesus too. He knows when we start to feel anxious. He understands when there's something wrong inside of us. Genesis 3. God sees Adam. And he knows, Adam doesn't look good. Adam looks distraught. Adam's trying to hide something. So God says, Adam, where are you? What's the matter? Adam says, I'm afraid. I'm naked. What he's really saying is, I'm filled with shame. And I'm trying to hide. I'm trying to cover my shame. Be all alone. Not be with others like David was talking about. Not there with God with this, but hide. Right? And God basically says, and I'm paraphrasing here, so bear with me. God basically says, no wonder you're afraid. You did what Satan said to do, and anyone who experienced doing what Satan wanted him to do would feel shame and would try to cover up. Makes sense. And see, that helps Adam kind of calm down. Oh, God's there for me. He empathizes with my anxiety. And now Adam can hear a little bit of truth. So God says, well, let's think about this. Right now, Satan and sin are a part of your world, and you're going to experience anxiety, and so you need to have some way to live in a world that has anxiety in it and evil. So let's think about this. You need a better covering, don't you? And Adam's going, yeah, I do. And so what does God do in those next few chapters? And you can look this up. He actually does this. He says, well then, let's make some coverings out of animal skins. Look, it's in there. God did. He was helping them. What can we do? And then not only that, but God also has a message for all of us who have anxiety about covering up, about being afraid we're a sinner, and somebody's going to see it, and I'm a bad person, and are they going to accept me? God says, I'm going to make a permanent covering for you. His name is Jesus Christ, and his righteousness is going to clothe you, so you can be in perfect peace when you're in Jesus. You don't have to be anxious anymore when you've got Jesus. See, that's grace. That's empathy. That's thinking through. Now, when it comes to truth and start to think, it gets hard to know how to think through what will help us in our situation. Because I have a lot of patients who they need to be able to learn how to calm their body, do the deep breathing, relaxing the muscles. And I always say the hardest part is calming the mind down, because usually when we're scared or when we get panicky, we go into some obsessive thinking, right? And we just think the same thing over and over and over and over, and we need to calm that thinking down. And so I say, where can you go? That's a calm place for you, so you can start calming your body and your mind down. And some of my couples say, well, I don't know. He's in the house with me. I don't know where I'm going to go. Or what happens if we're in the restaurant together and I start feeling my anxiety or he's the outside of me? Where do I go? I said, good question. Calm down. Think. Where can you go? That's quiet. You can be all alone in a restaurant. Bathroom. Perfect. Yes. The bathroom. You can always go to the bathroom. Even if you're at somebody else's house, you can say, I need to go to the bathroom. And you get in there and you start doing your breathing, and for most of my patients, prayer works. And they go, oh, Jesus, I'm so nervous. Please help me. And Jesus, I need to see you come. I want to go to Psalm 23 right now, Jesus, because I need you to be my good shepherd. And I'm going to feel the grass under my feet, and I'm going to listen to that water, and I'm going to see you coming to me and sit beside me. Come now. Jesus, help me think through what I need to say to my wife. What was the issue about again? How come we're mad in the first place? Let's see, what was it about again? What's the I statement I need to say? Help me think. I got to think of the right thing. What was I upset about? And I got to start to think again. And see, these are the kind of ways to learn how to empathize with ourselves. Yes, we come to therapy and the therapist empathizes with us, but really what the therapist is doing is modeling how you can learn how to empathize with yourself. Well, no wonder I'm getting nervous. I got nervous as a kid. No wonder this is happening to me when I hear a loud voice. That really bothered me when I was young. And so you learn to empathize with yourself. And then after you empathize, you calm yourself down. You go, I got to start thinking now. What's my wisdom here? What's truth about my situation? How can I help myself thinking good thoughts here? Because what does Paul say in Ephesians 4? Think on these things. Whatever is true. Think about what's true. Think about these things. Then I can have that peace that passes understanding in my heart and in my mind. And then, as Paul says in that Ephesians 4 chapter, then I can learn to be content in all situations. Learn. It's a process. We're always learning because we will never be perfectly without anxiety until we get to heaven. So now we're just learning to do it better, learning to abide in Jesus, learning what we need to think about, learning how to calm ourselves down. And so often we have wrong beliefs, and I could get into that, but I think our time is up, so I'm going to stick it. It's your time. But we have to think, too, about what our anxieties believe. My anxiety really did believe that authority figures were very unsafe people, and they were dangerous, and they were always going to tell me that I was unacceptable and I was wrong. Always. Without exception. That's a wrong belief. Not all authority figures will get that. And I have to reprogram my thinking what's true. Okay? So my question would be, it's really kind of a bottom line for you. You have anxiety. Do you understand it? Do you know how to calm yourself? Do you know how to empathize with yourself? Has anybody ever done that with you? And do you know what is more true about your situation than your anxiety is telling you? And can you manage your anxiety, or does your anxiety manage you? That's really the bottom line. That's the growth process you want to be on. Okay? Thank you. Thank you again to all of you. And there's still more. We still have a couple more things here this morning before we wrap up. So I do want to make a few announcements before Lauren comes up. And a few things, a few resources. These are some books that have helped me along the way. In case you're a reader, I love reading. This book is called The Gift of Being Yourself by David Benner. It talks about just understanding kind of who you are and that you're a gift from God. A lot of the stories that Jeremy told, a lot of the things that Dr. Peggy spoke of, in terms of the I and understanding who we are, especially as people of God, it reminded me of this book by Henry Nouwen called In the Name of Jesus. And this is where he talks about, along with another one called The Life of the Beloved, how we are loved by God. So a really wonderful book by Henry Nouwen. This one is practical, called Adrenaline and Stress. This just like has like diagrams and things, like all these pictures and like brain things and all these like fancy things. It really helped me when I had no idea what the frontal cortex was and all the blood things and all the things that happen in our brain as a result of fear and panic. And this book was really helpful with that. Adrenaline and Stress by Dr. Hart. And then, any Brene Brown fans out there? Man, that person has really, just through YouTube and a TED Talk that she did a couple years ago, has really helped me. She wrote a book called The Gifts of Imperfection. Wow, let go of who you think you're supposed to be
and embrace who you are. Anybody? Yeah. So, man, Brene Brown, she's got a master's in social work, PhD, and she was on Oprah, Oprah's whatever, you can take it or leave it, but she was on there, and just really helped me to understand that I'm imperfect, and that's a gift, actually. So some resources. Don't forget a couple other things to give us one of your tickets with your name for a $50 iTunes gift card. Don't forget to turn that in. There's also a, there's some coffee still. Okay, so let's continue. I want to introduce my friend Lauren. Lauren, I met about 3-4 months ago. We went to visit a friend's church, Sean, who is here, who leads a church here down the street. And a lot of young people, Cal State Long Beach, some graduates, just young people in the area gathering to seek God. And I met Lauren. She's a registered nurse. We got talking just about her life and this event, and she's like, you know, I want to help. And then we got talking at my house one day, and she said, well, you know, I have a story that I'd like to talk about. And I said, well, tell me about it. So we talked about it. She had a lot of great things to say about coming out of exile. And so I want you to welcome Lauren. She's going to talk about coming out of exile. Please welcome her this morning. Lauren.
I'm really glad that my English is out there, because, as David mentioned earlier, about having a trigger for something, and for me, the worst thing in the world is when I know I'm running late. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm running late. I'm never going to get there. I'm just not going to go. Or sometimes I'll just like make up a huge lie for why I'm late. So in this particular example, I was going to an event when I was in nursing school, actually, and I was probably only going to be like 10 minutes late or something, but I just didn't want to go. I couldn't do it. So I was like thinking, and I was like, what can I say as a lie? And I was like, I know. So with nurses, all you have to do is throw out like some fancy term and like list the right symptoms and stuff, and they'll believe you. So I get there, and I was like, ooh, my foot really hurts. And they're like, what's wrong? And I was like, I have plantar fasciitis. And we're just like, whoa, okay. So, like, come on. I was, like, walking with a limp for the rest of the day. It's super embarrassing. So I'm going to get on with my talk today. I'm really excited to share this with you. I've never shared my story before, so thanks for listening to me. So to start, I want you all to put yourselves in the situation of what I'm going to say next. When God sent his people into exile, everything they believed about their identity, their purpose, and their future was taken from them. Abandoned, they wondered, lamented, and questioned, why us? Why is it we who are always overtaken time and time again? They probably wondered why the God they called their own would call them to a burden so great as to be his people, to represent him to everyone when they could barely keep it together themselves. Each time God delivered them from famine or disease, they rejoiced in his provision. But it's pretty likely, from what I know of myself and my experiences, that even in these times of rejoicing and remembering God's promise of grace and mercy, fear, doubt, and anxiety aren't ever going to end. It's a little bit hard for me to understand why I, of all people, had the opportunity to share my story today. I was like, I'm young, I haven't really been through that much, and especially after closing with psychologists with all their expertise and years of learning. But what I came to understand is that I am an expert. I'm an expert in my own pain and suffering, but also in the overwhelming joy and gratitude that God has filled me with because he has delivered me out of darkness and into life. Yeah, seriously, amen. When I'm honest with myself, even though it doesn't feel like it, I have to admit that I know that this present state of happiness isn't going to last forever. But what I do know is that I refuse to allow my past pain become my present suffering. Anxiety, mental illness, personality disorders, addiction, you name it. These are things that might be a part of our lives forever. However, whether we feel ready to or not, we're all capable of putting down that suffering that we're constantly ruminating in and accepting the present delight that God gives us the option for every single day. Now, I'm going to take a break here and, like, lay some ground rules for what you should know about me. As you have maybe slash probably noticed, I blink a lot and also, like, sniff a lot. And I just want to let you know that it's not a pathology. I don't have, like, some horrible cold or anything that I'm going to affect you all with. It's, like, apparently just anxiety. And I was also diagnosed with, like, Tourette's or whatever, like, hello, I don't even know. I don't have, like, a cussing problem or anything, so no need to cover their ears. The second thing is that, oh, shoot. Okay, one second. I forgot my stuff. It was... when I lash out, am I truly angry, or am I just trying to take the shame off of myself and put the blame on another person? Or am I actually sad when I don't know who I am, or do I just have fear that I never will? The only thing that I learned during this time that helped me is that all emotions have a function. There are no bad emotions. Say it with me. There are no bad emotions. Great. However, there are less desirable ways to act on our emotions. When we're anxious, however, it's often very hard to determine what emotion you're feeling, and thereby really hard to act on it in an appropriate way. So at this point in my life, I was like chin deep in depression, anxiety, just flip-flopping all the time, and everything in me refused to believe that there was any way I could ever live differently, to not act impulsively on every emotion I experienced and when I hurt others because I was so angry. But you know what did work? Being able to accept that right now, in this moment, this is the way I am. I can be no other way in this moment right now. And that sounds semi-easy, but here's the catch. To be able to do this without judging yourself and without feeling like you're disappointing yourself or others. Like, in case you didn't know, this is the hardest thing in the entire world to do. Because to do it, you have to actually feel your emotions, all of them to their full strength. You can't stop judging yourself for being sad if you're constantly telling yourself that you're not allowed to be sad, or worse, that you can't handle being sad. And it took me so long to just go ahead and feel it, because the truth is, no emotion lasts forever. Emotions reach a peak, they get more painful and more painful and more painful, but eventually they have to dissipate, even if it's only the tiniest drop. And at the same time, an emotion in and of itself never killed anybody. It's not like it's going to get so a fear so strong that you're just like, I just died. I was so afraid that I died. And I mean, if we know that's not going to happen, to me at least, that was really empowering. Because you know what happens when you feel an emotion? You gain power over it, and it loses its grip on your soul. So that's the hard part. Being willing to feel your emotions and not judging yourself for feeling them. But what does this mean for who I am as a person right now? Never in my wildest dreams did I ever imagine that I'd be diagramming my emotions and keeping track of my good and bad behavior to show to my therapist every week, because that's for crazy people, right? But what I came to accept is that by learning coping techniques to function like a normal person and make wise decisions every day, I was going to be able to live a life worth living. I'm okay with being a broken person who needs help. And that word broken can mean a lot of things. But for me, it means I'm okay with being a mean person who needs help. Just like you were saying earlier, just call it by a different name. That can change your perspective on it so much. I'm okay with having anxiety and mental illness and being able to still be creative and healer and empathetic and inspiring because of that. If you have anxiety, I'm happy for those of you who are like, yeah, I had it in the past, and then all of a sudden, like, I dealt with it, and it went away. Like,
I don't really believe that, but okay.
For most of us, it's going to be a choice every single day, maybe forever. Forever, we're just not going to do things the same way that other people do them. And despite what everyone tries to make me believe, I draw power from the fact that I am different. This doesn't change the fact that for the rest of our lives, we may sometimes feel lost and forgotten, and like everything we believed about ourselves has been taken from us. The brief moments of escape might feel ridiculously insignificant in light of the looming pain, and we'll doubt ourselves and be mad that God has asked so much of us. Something that like really hits me from time to time is the fact that I'm 25 years old, and this verse struck me when I was 21, which means I spent the better part of my 20s basically taking care of my mental health and doing nothing else. It has been so time-consuming, going to therapy a million times a week and spending so much money. Like, meanwhile, my friends are getting married and, like, going to grad school and stuff like that, so, and traveling. So I was so bitter about that for a while. I was just like, I hate all those people. I don't know why, but I hate them. And what I came to realize, though, is seriously, there's absolutely nothing better that I could have done with my time than learn how to heal. It's a moment that made me really realize this is when I was 21 years old, I was like right in the midst of the mania that Archie made me just like super angry. I was going to work as a nurse's assistant at the hospital that I'm now an RN at, and I was like crying the whole way to work. By the time I got there, I was utterly empty. Like, my smiles were so forced that I like assumed people were afraid of me. I was just like grimacing the whole time. They're just like, oh, are you okay? But one of the cool things about being a nurse is that you're able to just get on people's levels so quickly. They accept you because you're in such an intimate time in their life that they have no one else to trust. So I remember I was like changing an adult diaper, and when I was done, the person turned to me and said, "How do you have so much love?" And I remember just being like, "Are you for real?" Like, I almost started crying on the spot. I like turned and like dab my eyes. But it was like, even in the midst of when I was like, I have nothing to give, I'm so dirty with sin, I could never ever be forgiven for these things, which I had never believed in my life, God still was using me to show love to other people. And I think that's the grandest thing. Yeah. Let me just tell you that one day you're going to feel like something's different. The things you believed in your mind will feel true in your heart, and the things your therapist told you or that you read in books will actually resonate with your soul. The suffering you clung to as your identity will lose its allure, and you'll feel like maybe you could just set it down and walk away, and you'll feel more like yourself than you ever did with it. You'll feel scared at first and think you need it and wonder if people will even recognize you without it. But they will, and they'll be so happy for you, and they won't hold it against you, even if you sometimes pick that suffering up again for a while. But you'll fight, and you'll make it through, even if you have to fake it sometimes. You'll do things you care about, and you'll sometimes even be happy for no reason at all. You'll be able to give and feel, and you'll make amends with all the people you blew off before, and you'll be okay if some of them don't forgive you. And it'll feel mysterious and wonderful, and you'll wonder whether everyone else feels this way all the time, and if they always have. And you'll wonder why in the world they aren't talking about it constantly, and singing and smiling and crying and like going like a crazy person to like run in their face and be like, this is what I have. Because when they look at their lives, they'll realize how amazing it is to have this kind of peace. And I couldn't really think of like a really cool way to end, so I'm going to end by reading one of my favorite passages. This is from Psalm 116. It says, "I love the Lord because he has heard my voice and my pleas for mercy, because he inclined his ear to me. Therefore, I will call on him as long as I live. The snares of death encompass me. The pains of Sheol lay hold on me. I suffer distress and anguish. Then I called on the name of the Lord." Okay. Oh, Lord, I pray, deliver my soul. Gracious is the Lord and righteous. Our God is merciful. The Lord preserves the simple. When I was brought low, he saved me. Return, O my soul, to your rest, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you. I believed, even when I spoke, I am greatly afflicted. I said in my alarm, all mankind are liars. But you have delivered my soul from death, my eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling. I will walk before the Lord in the land of the living. Thank you.